Tomorrow, 19th June 2020, South Sudan joins the rest of the world in commemorating the International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict.
And this year, the day seeks to address the issue of chronic underreporting of conflict-related sexual violence due to stigma, insecurity, fear of reprisals, the lack of services compounded by COVID-19 measures like lockdowns. And the day is currently running under the theme this year, Building Back Better. This is to support survivors of conflict-related sexual violence in the context of pandemic recovery. Now, joining us in the studio is the British ambassador to South Sudan, Johnny Baxter. You're welcome to Miraya this morning.
Thank you very much.
And also with us in the studio, we have Jacqueline Nasiwa, who is from the NGO Working Group on Women, Peace and Security. Jacqueline, good morning. Good to have you on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Good morning to you.
Great. Let's begin with you, Ambassador. First of all, welcome to Miraya Breakfast. It's good to have you. Have you been following the Euro 2020, Ambassador?
Just a little bit, yes. Looking forward to this afternoon.
Yes, this afternoon is going to be a big one. All right. Let's talk about this day. Jacqueline, in your experience, is conflict-related sexual violence still happening today? Is it a big thing in South Sudan today as we speak?
Thank you very much. And good morning to the listeners again. And I'll just say that conflict-related sexual violence is still existing in South Sudan and continue to increase. And probably just to highlight for the listeners what do we mean by conflict-related sexual violence, so that we can differentiate it from the violence we have in our homes and maybe the domestic violence that happen. So here we are talking about sexual abuse, which include rape, forced marriages, prostitution, forced slavery of women, girls and boys during conflict. And in our situation where we have experienced conflict from generations to generations, and worst of it is from 2013 to date, women still experience violence. And in terms of sexual violence and abuse, it's still increasing and happening in our communities. So I'll say, yes, sexual violence is still existing in our community.
All right.
And why is it important to mark this International Day for Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, Ambassador Johnny?
Thank you. Well, I think days like this are a really good opportunity for us to raise awareness. Radio programs like this allow more people to hear about the issue. And it's also a chance to start a conversation, and particularly talking about the things that you mentioned at the beginning, starting to talk about stigma. We can only address issues like stigma if we're prepared to talk about them, and this is an opportunity to do that. And I think, as we've heard from Jacqueline, sexual violence is in conflict is a global problem, but it's a particularly big problem in South Sudan, and that's why it's critical to talk about it here. I think the final thing I'd like to raise is it's a great opportunity to celebrate and to note and to acknowledge the amazing work done by people like Jacqueline and the organisation that she represents and other organisations. There is good work being done here, and it's really important. While the situation is very difficult, it's also important to focus on some of the things that are working, some of the good things that are being done by people, and to have a sense of belief that we can make things better.
Great. Now, Jacqueline, let's talk about the issue of stigma. As we did mention, one of the theme for this year is Building Back Better, supporting survivors. Now, can you tell us more about the experience of survivors, people you have talked to? What are the challenges that survivors face on a daily basis?
I think, first of all, I'll say that working with survivors is traumatizing even to myself, listening to their stories. And you can imagine they who felt the abuse, the torture, and the violence against them, what type of stress are they living with? And we have been working with survivors of conflict, and also survivors at the domestic level. But I could say that the ones of conflict are really traumatized and they are helpless. No one seemed to be caring about conflict-related sexual violence. Not much has been done to help them. I could say that some of the survivors' voices are really touching. Like we had one survivor who was gang raped. Mm-hmm. And this survivor was able to come to us after like 2-3 days. And we could not help because already the 72 hours for the support that is to be given to them has elapsed. And this survivor was to go through treatment. And already she was young and she conceived. And she has now a baby from that and she doesn't know who the father is. Mm-hmm. And secondly, she developed mental disorders. And her mother also got some mental disorders. So she kept asking us, like, what can we do to help her with the baby? The baby is a very beautiful girl, 2 years now. But there is no help that goes to them. And I think also some of the survivors suffer from diseases. Like, they could not say that they are raped because of the cultural aspect, but they live with it. And then you'll find that they probably get HIV/AIDS or they get STDs and others, fistulas. And when you ask them what happened to you during the conflict, they could narrate the other things, like they have beaten us, I fell down and I found myself unconscious, I'm in the hospital. So they couldn't express themselves and say it out. And they could say, since that time, I felt sick, I was not well. So that stresses them a lot, and they cannot break that silence. So trauma among them is high because of the impact, but also the stigma. Like one survivor was denied by her husband because her value as a wife deteriorated. The husband felt like she's no longer the wife that he used to have. She's a wife now to other people, to many people. She's a victim. She's a survivor. So that survivor almost committed suicide. And we put her under counseling so that she could regain back. And reaching to the hospital also, she could not afford to buy the medicines. First, she's injured. And then secondly, she's a survivor of sexual violence. So we spoke to her and put her for counseling. And then we got for her some few medications. When she regained, that's when she said, now, I believe I'm a human being. I almost took off my life. Mm-hmm. So you could see the trauma level that survivors go through, and they are helpless. They could not be helped by the institutions, but also by the officials who are supposed to be providing for them the services. Most of the support that go to survivors come from donors, which is good but sad, because the government has a responsibility to protect the women. And we will later on look at the legal frameworks that mm-hmm. say about it. And we also give the responsibility to protect women against sexual violence to the government, because this is a human rights issue. So leaving the women helpless, I think, is one of the saddest things, because the impact is not only on the woman, but also on the community, on her children, you know, and the society at large. And that breeds more violence and planting the culture of revenge. Mm-hmm. And if we are talking about sustainable peace, we need to address the impact of sexual violence on women.
All right. We'll come back to you, Jacqueline. Let's talk to ambassadors. Ambassador, you just had the painful experience of survivors that Jacqueline just narrated. What more needs to be done to eliminate sexual gender-based violence in South Sudan?
Well, I mean, the stories that Jacqueline has are just incredible and heartrending, and it shows just how much does need to be done. Mm-hmm. This is a clearly a very, very big and difficult problem. And it seems to me there are four obvious things, frankly, none of which are particularly easy, particularly in the context of where South Sudan is at the moment. I think the first is the establishment of accessible and relevant justice systems that hold perpetrators to account. That point that Jacqueline made mm-hmm. about having institutions to go to. The second is we do have to support the survivors of sexual violence. We need to be able to provide the support to enable them to heal and to rebuild their lives in the way, again, that Jacqueline has described. But I think for me the final two things are the things that are about trying to stop this from happening. Those other two are about dealing with it once it's happened. I think trying to stop is the hardest thing, but also the most important thing. And Jacqueline's already alluded to it. This is part of an enduring conflict in South Sudan anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's a consequence of that conflict, but it also plays into that conflict. And so it is so important that we find ways to stop the conflict that is happening here, both at the sort of large level across the state, but also at small levels, and do everything we can, because not only does the sexual violence that is perpetrated through that conflict have a devastating impact on the survivors and on people, but it also then sets up this cycle of revenge and further conflict, and that is almost incredible thing to think and talk about, and is almost more shocking. The final thing, and the hardest thing maybe for me as an outsider to say, is this question of challenging social norms. In many ways, there is too much that allows sexual violence to happen, and that needs to change. And that is the responsibility of everyone, of every individual, of women and of men.
Yes.
Particularly of men, and perhaps that's the thing that I can say, that in my head, if you are not part of the solution, then you are part of the problem. Okay. That's not saying that every man is a perpetrator, but every man has the potential, the possibility to stop an enabling environment. It doesn't just stop at individuals, though, because there are institutions in here as well, and communities, and I think there are some good examples, actually, of where communities have started to address this. We have an example in Torret where a community has set up some bylaws that sets out expectations of how one treats women. That's a you know, that's a step forward. So it needs to be looked at in multiple levels. And as I say, it's complicated. It's a complicated issue in itself, but it's particularly complicated in the context of South Sudan.
Great.
Okay. Jacqueline, earlier on you did mention that the responsibility does not just end at donors, right? We need to get the community, the government involved. Now, yesterday there was an event on conflict-related sexual violence, and the undersecretary at the ministry called on civil society to do more because they already have centers for response. Do you feel this is enough from the government, or should they have more to add on as well? What more can government do as far as you're dealing directly with these survivors, so what more can they do?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think civil society can do to some extent. Like what we do, we create awareness on sexual violence in conflict. We do community dialogues with community leaders so that they also become part of the solution. Like as Ambassador said, it's everybody's solution.
Yes.
Role to end this. We also amplify the voices of the survivors, and we help them with pro bono legal services. Mm-hmm. But the primary responsibility to protect every citizen's life is with the government.
Okay.
And I think the government needs to do a lot. And I'll say that the prevalence of sexual violence in conflict calls for rigorous action by the government. And it calls for strengthening of the justice institutions so that we end this culture of impunity. I think one thing here is that when it comes to sexual violence, it's treated like it's a private affair. But the gravity when it becomes a conflict-related sexual violence across the communities, across societies, and then it's no longer a private matter. It's a national issue. And this calls for national security, because without security for women, we are not likely to be safe as women,
right.
And the country cannot be also safe. So I think government need to take action and make priority in addressing conflict-related sexual violence. Our constitution is very clear in terms of the role of the government and in terms of the role of the security apparatus. And it's unfortunate that we have still fighting going on. We have rebels in the bushes. and we have the peace agreement, which is moving on, but the security arrangements are not done. And I think this pause is still, I could say not a window, but pause is a platform where insecurity can still be ignited against women. So, which means government has to also work, shift in making sure that the security arrangements, the containment processes take place, and also that we have a unified army. The second one is that perpetrators need to be brought to book. Mm-hmm. We have seen a lot of documentations of these violations by UN agencies, international community, and by civil society. And even by the government, there were investigations done. For example, in Bentiu, when the issue came up, government formed a committee that did an investigation. And until now, we have not seen concrete steps taken to bring the perpetrators to book. We have seen good examples from Ye, mm-hmm. where the government was able to form the military court-martial, and some soldiers were tried. And from that time, at least, I could say that the level of sexual violence in conflict against civilians have reduced. It has not gone off, but it has reduced. So we are also hoping that this should be done to other contexts and other parts of the country so that we deter others from committing it, but also we put an end to those who have committed it. The other one is that women's safety and security is very important if this peace process is to move forward. We are the majority population. But we are the vulnerable communities. And a society that does not protect its population, particularly women, is a weak society. Because when we are not protected, we don't go to schools, our girls don't go to school, we don't contribute to development, and we are always displaced and running with our children. The men alone cannot develop this country. So let's try and make sure that women are safe. And when we are safe, our families are safe and society is safe.
Okay.
Great. I know you have already touched on some of the legal protections against women. But what are the legal protections against conflict-related sexual violence? Are survivors able to access to justice?
First of all, I will start with the legal framework. We have both national laws and the international and regional laws. We have our transitional constitution, 2011, and in it we have the Bill of Rights. And this Bill of Rights stipulates that women have equal and full rights with men. And no one should be subjected to torture, slavery, and even things that are not human. And I could say that conflict-related sexual violence is one form of torture against women. And it's one of the inhuman, degrading treatment against women. Sexual violence comes in different forms. It could be through displacement, intimidation, and all this. So these are the things that our Bill of Rights stipulate as things that violate human rights. And women's rights are human rights. We have also our Child Act, which protects children from violence, from slavery, and from torture. And forced slavery or forced prostitution or marriage is in conflict situation is a violation of our own Child Act. We have UN Security Council Resolution 1325, and we also have this resolution 2015 on prevention of conflict-related sexual violence. And South Sudan is part of this international community. So we are bound by these resolutions of the UN to protect our citizens. And this means women's protection against conflict-related sexual violence is guaranteed. From the African continent, we have the Maputo Protocol, which talks about rights of women. and it also stipulates that women should not be subjected to torture, slavery, or forced marriages, and subjecting women to rape, you know, without consent. Sex without consent is rape. And in violence, you cannot say that I got this lady in the front line and she has accepted. And, you know, no, we had had situations where even some women reported that they were raped by probably those in the bushes, the rebels. Mm-hmm. And then they come for help. And then those that they come for help to also end up abusing them.
Yeah.
And that means that women need more protection. Those who are given the law into their hands, enforcing the law, need to practice the law than abusing the law and also subjecting women to this degrading treatment.
Okay. And Ambassador Johnny, how is the UK government assisting and helping in the elimination of conflict-related sexual violence right here in South Sudan?
I think the first thing to say is that the UK is has preventing sexual violence and conflict as a very, very high priority. And your listeners may be aware that the first visit by a member of the British royal family to South Sudan by the Countess of Wessex was exactly on this issue. She came to talk to
the Vice President on this.
So it's an area of priority for us. There are two direct things we do, and then one much more indirect thing. We support institutions that do direct service delivery, mm-hmm. so people like Jacqueline's organisation and others. We also fund a set of other activities. We fund the health system significantly, we fund the education system, and within those systems we need to make sure that those are set up as well to make the circumstances safer to access those services for survivors. But I think the third thing, and this links back to something that Jacqueline said, and I think it's probably the most important, actually, is bringing everything we do together to address this sort of issue. And fundamentally, the thing I want to focus on is voice. Voice for everyone in South Sudan, including women. And we focus on that and talk to the government a lot about that in every context. Because I think, as Jacqueline said, if you don't have women's voices, both being heard but being part of designing whatever it is, the constitution, processes that are happening, then they won't be properly designed to take into account women's needs. And that means a less well-functioning society. And for me, that is one of the really critical elements of this, is to have a greater element of everyone's voices, particularly women's voices, in a lot of the critical processes that we have here. I do just want to highlight that, as Jacqueline said, the government has taken steps, has started to take steps, and there are some good examples, and I think it's important to highlight those examples and build on that. This is such a challenging situation. It isn't any good just sort of continuing to sort of shout at people about it, and I'm not saying that any of us are doing that. I think one of the things we need to do is find out where it's working well, mm-hmm. look at that, talk about it, see how it can be expanded out, because as Jacqueline said, it must be expanded out. But ultimately, we need to get to a situation where every woman has the right to live in safety and security, and basically not to fear that the war will be fought out over their bodies.
Great. Now, Jacqueline, you did mention earlier about the issue of stigma and that led women to, you know, fear to come out or report these issues.
Yeah.
It might happen to them, but then they keep quiet until probably they are sick. That's when they go to the hospital. What can be done to change this mindset? Because, first of all, sometimes they are already victims, they're survivors, and even their family turns against them sometimes. And you know, tend to hide it. What can we do, I mean, to change all that in quotes that they put or that they think is a shame to report this issue to relevant authorities?
I think one of the examples I gave about dialogue was important. Dialogue with communities, dialogue with survivors, and dialogue with stakeholders, so that they understand the dynamics of sexual violence and the impact on the victim. creating awareness so that people know that it exists, mm-hmm. and acceptance that it's real and it has to be addressed is very important. I think some communities still feel shameful for their loved ones to be testifying or to say that they are victims. And that scares away victims from coming forward. Our institutions need also to understand that sexual violence is not the wish of a woman to go through, mm-hmm. because sometimes they blame the woman. And we just had a training 2 days ago, and I was presenting on the same. And one of the participants asked me, like, women dress badly, that's why they are raped. And I'm like, how about those in the front line, the women that you meet in the villages? Did you even take a chance to look at what they were wearing? These women even don't have the miniskirt that you think that we wear in the town. Or they don't have the trousers that we wear. They are just women who are running. So sometimes they throw the blame back to the women just as an excuse. But I'll say that families need to be aware, and they should be supportive to the survivors. Government needs to support survivors. For example, if you are coming to the hospital, the reception should be welcoming. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you come there and you are ignored because already the biasness is there, like, mm-hmm. this person is sexual abused. Because in our society, talking about sexuality is even a problem. Talking about menstrual period, talking about sex between husband and wife in public, it's not acceptable norm. Now when you are going to the hospital and you are going to report about sexual abuse, no one will pay attention, or sometimes even they will shy away from listening to what you are saying.
Yeah.
So this pushes away the survivors from saying that. So I think maybe training, capacity building for those who are handling sexual violence victims is very important, so that they also know that they handle them with care, not like any other victim who is coming to report. In the police, when I'm a victim, I'm reporting, the police should not be asking me, where were you? Were you at night? And, you know, what were you doing in the villages? Those are the things that I think we need to have a conversation with the law enforcement agencies and with those in the health services. But I'll still insist communities need to support survivors. They are not people who are outcast. It's not their wish that they should become victims.
Great. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. And Ambassador, just before I let you go, any final remarks, message out there that you'd like to send on this particular day?
Well, I was just thinking from what Jacqueline said there, it seems to me there are two things that combine here. One is the ability and the bravery of people like Jacqueline to stand up, publicly talk about this. That's why this radio slot is great. That's yeah. why having days like this are so important. But the second is having women in positions of power. And when women are in positions of power, then they can start to lead communities, start to set an example. That example might be about talking about these things, mm-hmm. or it might be about pushing for better treatment. And I think both of those things combined, it's a long process to change a society. But those are the kind of things. They ought to be happening anyway, but if they happened more often, they would make a really significant impact on this really, really critical and important issue for South Sudan and for the world.
Thank
okay.
you.
Jacqueline, do you have any last remarks?
Okay, my last remarks is going to be to the survivors outside there and to the society, is that this day should remind us of our resilience as women. Despite the pain that we go through, life still exists. And it's not the end of the road that we have been suffering, and sexual violence is perpetrated against us. This day should be a call for action, that it's our responsibility to end this, I could say, pandemic, because it's consistent. And it's also our responsibility to break the silence and start talking about it so that we find the solution. So to the victims, we love you. To the perpetrators, please stop what you are doing. You are human, and we need to act like human beings.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. Thank you, Ambassador, for coming to Miraya Studios. We do appreciate your time.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.